It's radio, not television. You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
And I'm David Hyde. America's favorite pastime hasn't been baseball for a while. It's not even football. Ross, you know what it is?
Not soccer.
No. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, it's television. The average American watches 2.8 hours a day. That's over 1,000 hours per year. So how is all that TV watching reflecting, changing our collective consciousness or unconscious? What's new in 2014? When we have tough questions about TV and American popular culture, we always turn to Robert Thompson. He's a professor at Syracuse University, where he studies television and popular culture. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good. So Saturday Night Live has been in the news this week. The show has been criticized, of course, for a lack of diversity over the years. Now they've got one African-American female comedian and apparently two writers. So what does this say to you about kind of where we are in 2014 when it comes to minorities and television?
Well, I mean, the first thing, I suppose, is how surprising it is that Saturday Night Live, you know, which has always been kind of a cutting-edge, hip program, how long it's taken them to do this. They've had a total over the last 39 years of 137 regular cast members, and I think four of them have been African-American females, which isn't very many over 39 years, especially now given the fact that we've had many years of people like Oprah and now the First Lady who need to be parodied, and of course they've had to have some of their other cast members in drag. So finally, they've now responded. She starts the 18th, and she's going to be scrutinized, I imagine, a lot. And the two new African-American female writers go to work on Monday.
Robert, obviously this has been an issue for a long time beyond Saturday Night Live. You know, minority representation on TV is a part of popular culture. It's part of our conversations about it. Where are we in 2014 when it comes to television?
Well, I mean, certainly a lot better than we were in the early days of television in the 50s, where if you had African-American characters at all, they were on shows like Amos and Andy and Beulah, hardly the kinds of roles that one would desire. We've gone a lot further than that, but oftentimes in shows that are the big integration has been in these big ensemble programs. So you've got some people of color sprinkled into these integrated types of casts. When it comes to shows featuring primarily people of color in the cast, which of course we've got all over, people who are primarily white in the cast, there are very few. And those that have played in the past have tended to last a season or two and go away. One prominent producer once said the only way to integrate television is through these ensemble types of shows. And, you know, it's weird. I don't know where the idea is that somehow this is how business has to be done. If you look at the history of American entertainment, from rock and roll and jazz to Roots and the Cosby Show and Michael Jackson, African Americans have been at the center of some of our most spectacularly popular stuff.
And yet it is a business. How successful are shows that feature minorities in leading roles, and what are some examples?
Well, I'd go back to The Cosby Show, one of the single most successful programs of all time. I mean, it went 5 years in a row number one. That tied the only other show that had done that up until that point, which was All in the Family. American Idol subsequently beat that record. So there was a show that did very, very well. And we've had a number of other hits. In Living Color did well on its network. It was an integrated cast, but you know, executive produced by the Wayans family. And now we've got Scandal, which, of course, stars Kerry Washington and is produced by Shonda Rhimes. So we're seeing some movement here, but I suppose it's less than one would expect for 2014.
And if they're so successful, why aren't we seeing more of it?
That's a good question, and I think the best answer to that is we will see more shows like that when we see more people of color in the executive boardrooms. I mean, I think if you've got the people who are the bosses making programming decisions, you'll see more of those kinds of programs on the screen itself. And that isn't to say that I think the people who are currently making those decisions are racist. I don't think they are. But you tend to respond to ideas that come over your desk that seem familiar to you, that seem to be the kind of thing that you recognize. And I think, therefore, a lot of the kinds of programming that we see on TV reflects the lifestyles, if you will, of the people who are making those decisions.
Professor Robert Thompson studies television and popular culture and teaches at Syracuse University. Robert, another big topic for viewers, at least, is some of these anti-heroes like Walter White. He's the character, the meth-making former chemistry teacher on Breaking Bad. Are these kinds of characters more common than they were in the past?
A lot more common. I mean, until we got to J.R. Ewing in the late 1970s on Dallas, we had virtually none of these characters. Practically all of the title roles on television were not only good guys, but in many ways they were kind of super good good guys. I think what we started to see change in the 1980s and into the 1990s, and certainly by the time the century turned, was a complete reversal of that. Now it's actually hard to find a good old-fashioned hero. Everything from House and The Shield into The Sopranos and Breaking Bad and Mad Men, most of the best shows on television, including all of these shows that are getting such critical acclaim, are about some really, really flawed people. But I suppose that was also true of Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, Shakespeare's Macbeth, and lots of other things. Some of our greatest masterpieces are about people who are very bad people.
Why is it that these characters are on the rise? Why do they seem to resonate so much with viewers in 2014, 2013? What's going on?
I think they're on the rise because there are now places to put them. I mean, until the 1980s, you had standards and practices at the networks that simply didn't allow characters like this. And then it took a while for that evolution to occur. Now that we've got all of these cable operations and now direct-to-internet programs that aren't liable to any of those old-fashioned tradition and rules, there's a place for these. The reason we respond to them is that, I hate to say it, but Walter White, a highly flawed guy that turns into a really evil character, is an awful lot more interesting to watch than Magnum P.I. used to be, who was a, you know, a clean and shiny good guy.
Poor Tom Selleck. Robert Thompson, I just got one more question for you and about a minute left, but you mentioned there are fewer and fewer heroes, just sort of genuine heroes. What's an example of a show that has that, if that's your thing?
Well, there's one show, and really only one show on network television, and one of the few anywhere, that's old-fashioned, you know, traditional, happy, functional families, and that's Modern Family. You've got three different families, all of whom love each other and are concerned with each other and try to do the right thing. And that show also manages to be popular and very hip. And that is a lot harder to do than it sounds. Doing nice drama and nice comedy like Modern Family is a lot more difficult than doing the snarky stuff that we see in 99% of the other time slots.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Robert Thompson is the director of the Bleer Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, telling us about trends in TV and popular culture in 2014. You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm David Hyde with Ross Reynolds.